Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Thursday night. That game, to start the 2019 NFL season, might have been boring. The Thursday night game was boring, but the first Sunday was not. Sure as hell was not. In fact, it was awesome. And as with anything, let me preface all of this by saying it's only one game. It's only one game. You can't jump to conclusions about anybody or any team after only one game. That said, week one had a hell of a lot of action for only one game. You had Patrick Mahomes lighting up the Jags, then getting hurt, or so it seemed. You had an entire sport holding its collective breath when he left the game in the second quarter. But then he comes back to finish with 378 yards and three touchdowns and look great. And as good as he looked, how about Sammy Watkins? Sammy Watkins may have looked even better. 9 receptions, nearly 200 yards, and all three of those TDs.
Second and goal. Mahomes, pump and throw. End zone. Touchdown! Sammy Watkins has been a machine. Third of the day for Watkins.
Yeah, I think he's still got some weapons, even when Tyreek Hill went down. On the other side of that, things were not so good for the Jags. You talk about a hard luck guy. Nick Foles, busted clavicle in the first quarter. Then you've got Miles Jack. They lose him to an ejection in the second quarter. So if Kansas City picked up right where they left off last year, then Jacksonville may have done the exact same thing. Let me move through this quickly. I've got lots of opening thoughts on the opening weekend. Also, you had Ezekiel Elliott making his return only to get upstaged by Dak Prescott, who had arguably his best game ever. He passed for over 400 yards, he had 4 touchdowns, and he had a perfect QBR. About DeSean Jackson making his return to Philly and making Washington look stupid. 8 receptions, 154 yards, 2 long TDs. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. And what the hell do I know? Maybe it'd be a good idea to try to cover this guy on some of those deep routes.
On third down, 4-man rush. Pressure comes. Wentz going to let it fly. He's got Jackson again. He's got it. Touchdown.
DeSean Jackson? Oh, you didn't see that, did you, Alvy? He looked awesome. Meantime, you had Kyler Murray. And Kyler Murray, thank you. Kyler Murray did not look awesome to start that game. Understandably so. A rookie starting his first game. Yet he brought them back. The Cards came from 18 down in the fourth quarter in Murray's first NFL game to rip a tie from the Lions and completely melt the brain of whoever put out this tweet for the Detroit Free Press. Quote, final. The Lions, Lionsed. The Cardinals, Cardinalsed. Everyone's unhappy, and it's all okay because one day the earth will get swallowed by the sun and nothing will ever exist ever again. End quote. Oh, okay. I've got to imagine at this point that Jets fans are hoping that that day comes sooner rather than later because gangrene jumped all over the Bills early on. They had a 16-0 lead over the Bills. Great start to the season. The defense looked good, forcing turnovers, getting a pick six, and a safety. Le'Veon Bell getting off to a good start after a year off and beating down a division rival. It could not have gone any better than that. And then it could not have gone any more Jets than that. Giving up 17 straight points, and they go from winning 16-0 to losing 17-16 at home. From absolutely dominating to absolutely choking. Absolutely nothing worked for them. You blow a 16-point lead. Despite the fact that you were +3 in the turnover department, man, you've got to be really good to be that bad. You have to be really good to be that bad. What a choke job that was. And again, it's only one game. It's only one game for everybody. Like, take Lamar Jackson. It's only what? Jackson? Alvy, twice. It's only one game. As yeah, thanks for nothing, Alvin. Way to get that today. It's only one game. However, in the case of Lamar Jackson, it's just one game. But Lamar Jackson is an NFL quarterback. And the Miami Dolphins are not an NFL team.
Third down and three. Jackson has all day. Looking deep for Hollywood Brown again. He's got it. Brown off to the races. And he stays on his feet. Touchdown. 83 yards.
Let me make this crystal clear. Lamar Jackson should not be playing receiver. The Miami Dolphins should not be playing pro football. Making fun of the Dolphins is like shooting fish in a barrel. So is playing them. Jackson absolutely lit them up. And then Jackson lit up everybody who has doubted him.
Pretty much the whole offseason that you were going to throw the ball. Do you think you proved to people that you were throwing the ball?
Probably not, but not bad for a running back.
Not bad for a running back. Not bad for a running back. 17 for 20 for 324 yards, 5 touchdowns, and a perfect quarterback rating. Take that for data.
Take that for data.
I mean, anybody who was running with that garbage that the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in college would be better as a wide receiver in the NFL, better apologize for that right now. Or at least explain it right now. Or at least answer for it right now. Or at least just sit there and slam a Crow Sando and chase it with some humble pie right now. Because not only did he turn around Baltimore's season last year, they committed to him in the offseason, got him weapons, and then he goes right out and he does that yesterday. Now again, it's just one game. It's just one game, and just as importantly, it was just the Dolphins. Again, only one game. But reportedly, that one game was more than enough for some Dolphins players, according to PFT. Multiple players reached out to their agents after the game and asked to be traded. Yeah, that's not so good. That's not good, and neither are the Dolphins. I don't ever recall ever hearing anything like that. One game in, and a bunch of their guys are telling their reps, get me the hell out of here. Get me the hell out of here. Just one game, right? One game in, and we're talking about an alleged mutiny. Even back in the day, when they looked like they could run the table. No, looked like they would run the table in reverse. It never got to this point. Never got close to this point. Yet, here we are. Here the bleep we are. After only 1 week.
Here we are. Here the f*** we are.
I mean, when they were looking at running the table backwards back in the day, they at least tried every single week. They cared. And personally, I got to be honest, I'm a little confused by the whole thing. I'm kind of confused as to why the Dolphins players are reacting the way they are. I mean, sure, they were down 42-0 in the first half. Sure, they were humiliated 59-10 at home in front of zero fans. Exactly what did they expect? Where were you all the last few months when everybody in the world knew that this team was tanking for Tua or hoping for Herbert or getting a really early start on losing for Lawrence? Were you around for the Laremy Tunsil trade? Did you not notice when they started collecting as many draft picks as possible and as few players as possible? Why did you need to get your ass kicked for 60 minutes to realize, oh, wait, we're not that good. Oh, wait, they don't even want to win. Oh, wait, they want to lose. How do you not know that? Everybody knew that. The tank is on, so how are you the last ones to know it? How are the guys in that locker room the last ones to know it? And, of course, the front office and the coaching staff's not going to say they're tanking. They can't. They can't say they are, but actions reveal priorities, and winning is not a priority in Miami. Not this year, it's not. I mean, Brian Flores isn't going to go out there and say, we're trying to lose games. But then again, he doesn't have to, does he? He just has to play the team that he's been given, and that will take care of the losing. Again, only one game, but the Dolphins look like they'll have another 15 just like it starting this week against New England. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. We want beef. pure and simple. Where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, tasteless. Nope. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef very seriously, so you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein and comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality that you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Charles Davis is my guest. Charles, good morning. Great to have you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I trust you're doing the same, and I think you broke it down so nicely. Thursday night, everybody got all worried about, oh, no one plays in the preseason. Oh, this is terrible. But we broke out in a big way on Sunday, that's for sure.
That's it. Charles Davis is joining us. All right, then. You were in Philadelphia, Charles, yesterday for Washington at Philadelphia. What kind of expectations did you have for both teams going into that game? And then what did you make of how that first half played out?
Oh, yeah. Look, this is the best way I can describe it, Jim. Washington going into the game, if you asked me about them, I would have described them in baseball terms. Good field, no hit, meaning obviously they can play defense very well. We weren't sure about the offense. Philadelphia on the opposite side, the big question, of course, Carson Wentz taking over his team again and no Nick Foles looming. Would he play to the level we saw 2 years ago when he should have been the league MVP? Well, when the first half ended, it was 20-7. At least we knew we were in Philadelphia, Jim, because they booed them off the field. I mean, the fans were in midseason form, booed them right off the field. Then the second half, we saw what Philadelphia wanted to do and got done in the offseason. They got some people around Carson Wentz to be more explosive, namely DeSean Jackson with two big touchdown catches.
We're talking to Charles Davis. I was going to ask you about that next. I mean, DeSean Jackson, not only is he back and still explosive, he's back and explosive at age 32 and running right by defenders. 8 receptions, 154 yards, 2 touchdowns. Charles, it looked like a flashback to 6 years ago. How do you explain that with this guy?
It's a great question, Jim, and he's one of the marvels of the league. And he actually said that when he was younger, he didn't worry about all the, you know, the extra stuff he had to do, the stretching and all that. He said, cheetahs don't stretch. They just get up and run fast.
Right.
Now he's actually stretching a little bit, and guess what? The cheetah still runs fast. And what I liked about what I saw Sunday, Jim, is that he and Wentz have already established an excellent connection on the deep ball, because going into the season, that was one of the concerns. Carson Wentz throwing the deep ball, it wasn't looking great, only like 41% on passes over 20 yards last year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And remember, DeSean Jackson, Jameis Winston never really established that connection in Tampa, did they? It never looked right. He had a better connection with Ryan Fitzpatrick on the deep ball. Well, on Sunday, it showed all the off-field work came to fruition. OTAs, mini camps, throwing at Carson's house in Houston in the offseason. He and DeSean Jackson have it figured out in the early going.
It's paying immediate dividends. Charles Davis is joining us. So as good as that second half was for Philadelphia, how bad was it for Washington?
It was really bad because they couldn't do what they have to do, which is run the football. And you know Trent Williams is still out at left tackle. Donald Penn filled in for him and was playing fairly well. And then the second half had a couple of penalties, but it wasn't just him. The defensive front of Philadelphia, which struggled with that offensive line in the first half, they overwhelmed them in the second half. I mean, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett came to play yesterday for Philadelphia. They stuffed them in the run game. And once that happened, that made it very difficult for Case Keenum and those young receivers, because in the first half, Jim, he spread it around. Everyone got a touch. Everyone got a catch. Everyone got a taste. In the second half, they couldn't get that done. A couple of drops kicked in, and the young receivers really became young. And there was one deep ball that Keenum had. McLaurin, the rookie out of Ohio State, he actually overthrew him. Otherwise, that could have taken some pressure off.
We are talking to Charles Davis. All right, so that was Philadelphia, Washington. The big story yesterday was the fact that the Raiders released Antonio Brown. The Patriots signed him. First off, Charles, when it's all said and done, how badly did that go for the Raiders and Antonio Brown?
Horribly. Absolutely horribly. And Jim, is in some ways it's not a surprise because guys who act in a certain way, you may give them more money, you may change the scenery, but if you give them any kind of you know, leeway, they may very well just revert back to what you saw before. And let's face it, every guy that goes to a new team, you always think, well, he won't do that with us, or we'll establish a new way with him. With Antonio Brown, it just started badly. You know, he's burning his feet in cryotherapy in France, and then he shows up at camp, and the helmet does. And he became the focal point instead of the Raiders trying to get a reboot. And I thought at one point they were just going to suspend him for a certain number of games. That didn't happen. And, of course, he ended up in New England. And I'll say this, Jim. That's the absolute right team, and for this reason. Everyone thinks, oh, well, everyone's rehabilitated New England. That's not always true. Didn't Albert Haynesworth go there for a while? Okay, so it doesn't always work. But what I'm saying is, if he doesn't toe the line and do it the New England way, Tom Brady will look at Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick will look at Tom Brady, and they'll cut him on the spot. If he goes anywhere else, you know what those teams are going to do? They're going to try and make it work. And that may very well drag down your locker room. Okay, I'm not crazy about him being out there, and he's got a great other opportunity with the way that he acted in Oakland, but that is the way the NFL works. But if he does well in New England, that means he's doing all the right things. But if you see him gone, Bill Belichick won't last 5 minutes if he doesn't do it the right way. So it's the absolute perfect team for him to go to.
We're talking to Charles Davis. I agree with everything you just said. So if you had to guess, how do you think that goes? Is he going to fit in? Will he accept that it's got to be team first? I mean, they will get rid of him if it doesn't work. Do you think it's going to work?
He will say all the right things. Tom Brady has already extended the olive branch and the hearty handshake of welcome. Right? Didn't they say last night on the telecast, Jim, that he's going to be staying at his house until he gets settled?
Yep.
I mean, all those things are there for him. But I just go by past predictive behavior. And what we've seen in the last few years from him does not tell me that he's going to make it 16 games. Now, he could easily fool me. But they also have Josh Gordon, who is one of the better players when he's able to stay on the field. But every time he comes back to the NFL, it lasts a certain amount of time, and then something else happens. Because Josh has a disease, and it's unfortunate. He has to fight through all of that. So we're looking at the odds of Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, and Demaryius Thomas, the excellent veteran who doesn't have any of those issues. It's just that he's a little bit older. Will all three of them be able to contribute for 16 and give Tom Brady what he wants? I would say no at this point. And I'm more bullish on Demaryius Thomas than I am on the other two. I hate saying that about Josh Gordon because that sounds like I'm a hater. I'm just saying, Jim, how many times has he come back to the league? And whatever it is, you think it's a safe haven, doesn't necessarily turn out that way. He still needs extra help off the field, and I hope that he gets that, and I hope that it works. But I'm just saying, I'm not bullish on the idea of those three making it through 16.
Charles Davis joining us. All right, so you've played this game. You've covered this game. You've been around this game a long time, and you've seen pretty much everything there is to see. How do you explain the fact that Tom Brady is out there at 42, completing two-thirds of his passes for nearly 350 yards and three touches against a defense that people thought was really good?
You don't. There is no explanation. We just sit back and enjoy the heck out of it, Jim. You just marvel. You absolutely marvel. And if you don't marvel, then you that's when the hater really comes in, right? I don't care if you're a New England fan or not. What he has done to put himself in this position, and he's almost Benjamin Button, isn't he? They showed those pictures last night of what he looked like as a rookie to what he looks like now. Does he look like he's losing years as opposed to gaining years? And my favorite picture was when they showed he and George Blanda side by side. And Blanda, you know, because they're the guys at, 43 have thrown the three or more touchdown passes. Blanda looked like he was 63 in the picture. And Tom looked like he was closer to 23 to 25. It was unbelievable. What he has done to put himself in that spot, not many of us would sacrifice the way Tom Brady has sacrificed in order for health, conditioning, how he works at the game, all those things. Because the more success you have, Jim, what do you usually do? You get more comfortable, and you start cutting corners. That guy's never cut any corners. It is absolutely one of the most unbelievable things we've seen in the NFL, And I'm just sitting back and just trying to appreciate him while we've still got him.
No, I agree. It's impossible not to be awed by this guy unless you're only here to hate. To see what he was doing last night at 42 against a really good defense, to me, was just absolutely awesome to see. Then finally, you and I have talked about Kyler Murray in the past. I know you were covering the Eagles, but when you hear that he went for 300 yards and a couple of touchdowns and led his team back from 18 in the fourth quarter, is any part of you surprised?
Frankly, no, and here's why. When we started the preseason, obviously we go to all the height and this new offense and all that other stuff. And you remember, Jim, week two of the preseason, he had a rough game. You remember that?
Yes.
Remember when you end up taking the sack and he was close to the goal line? It looks like he dove back and didn't know where he was and took safety and all that. He had that rough game. But I watched him in game three against Minnesota. And I remember telling people afterwards, if he's not successful in this league, it's not because of his height, and it's not because he can't throw the ball or throw the ball with touch, anticipation, and timing. Because if you watch that tape, well, he did a lot of those things. Ball's in the right spot all the time. So, frankly, none of that surprised me because the type of offense he's going to run, they're going to throw the ball 40 to 50 times per game. He's going to just keep getting better and better at that. The problem for them is, can they hold up in every other aspect of the game? And look, they in Detroit, neither one of them was particularly impressive going into the season. It's almost fitting that it ended up being a tie, isn't it?
No doubt.
27-27. But this kid, there is a specialness to him, and they've got the exact right offense for him in terms of what they're doing, because they're going to maximize. I'm eager to watch him play throughout the year because Lamar Jackson got tagged with plenty of the same stuff. Pretty good day for him yesterday with 5 touchdown passes. And by the way, only ran it 3 times, which is exactly what Baltimore needs more of to keep him out of harm's way.
He is an NFL Network analyst. He is an NFL and Fox analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. Getting us started on a busy Monday. Charles Davis, my guest. Charles, appreciate you and great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thanks always for having me on, Jim. You take care of yourself. We'll talk down the road.
You've got the Patriots, right? And then you have the Steelers and you have the Raiders. Why don't we talk about all three of those teams and the one guy who connects all of them, Antonio Brown. Let's start with the fact that the Patriots could not have looked any better in that beatdown of the Steelers last night. Could not have looked any better. The Steelers could not have looked any worse. In other words, are the Patriots that good or are the Steelers that bad? The answer probably is yes. I mean, it looked like the Steelers wanted to get on that bus right from about the time the Patriots did this.
Funky little snap. Oh boy. And wide, wide open. Philip Dorsett. Big night for him. Touchdown. 58 yards.
Ball game. Forget the rest of the first half and all of the second half. Thanks for coming. That game was over when Dorsett crossed into the end zone. And probably earlier than that. The only thing more soul-destroying for the Steelers than losing 30-3 in prime time, in week one, to an alleged rival, is losing 30-3 in prime time to the team that is now adding your former Pro Bowl wide receiver, Antonio Brown. That's right. In case you didn't hear, Antonio Brown, a wide receiver from Central Michigan, who was a free agent, signed with the Patriots over the weekend. Remember, that was the one team that the Steelers did not want to trade Brown to. That when they were looking at trade opportunities, the Patriots reportedly made it very clear, we want this guy. And the Steelers made it equally clear, we're not sending him there. Anywhere but there. They did everything they could to ensure that it wouldn't happen. Man, they thought they jammed him so hard when they sent him to Oakland. They were doing everything in their power not to send Antonio Brown to the Patriots. So where does he end up? With the Patriots. And then in week one, they get obliterated by the Patriots. And it happened without Brown even being in uniform. But damn, Steeler fan, how good did it feel? How good did that feel for a little while when Brown was lighting himself and his feet and the Raiders on fire? Man, that was sweet, wasn't it? Hope you enjoyed that. Because that ish just blew up in your face. And if you were surprised, you should not be on any level at all. Like, there was no way that wasn't going to happen. Was anybody surprised that the Patriots signed this guy within a mere hours of him being broken off by the Raiders? You should not be surprised by that. You should not be surprised that the Raiders allegedly thought about suspending Brown for yelling at Mike Mayock and threatening to punch him, but apparently John Gruden decided not to suspend him. He was going to play him tonight. Nor should you be surprised that Brown released some bizarre video, which appeared to include a recorded phone call with John Gruden. Never mind that he may have broken the law when he did that. May have broken the law. One of the first things I learned when I got into local radio, way back in the 80s. Yeah, I said it, back in the 80s. You cannot roll tape on somebody that you're speaking with without their permission. Either AB didn't get that memo, or AB just didn't give a damn. Nor should you be surprised that the Raiders, after deciding not to suspend Brown, they decided to fine him and then release him. And most of all, you should not be surprised that it's the Patriots who got him. That was like the most obvious, most predictable thing ever. It was so obvious, it had already become a corny joke a few weeks earlier. Now, for this whole morality thing, this whole notion that the Patriots are rewarding horrible behavior, have you seen what Bob Kraft was up to during the postseason? Morality and rewarding good behavior slash punishing bad behavior does not come into this at all. If you're looking for an NFL team to be some beacon of morality, you're begging. And you're really begging if you think that it's going to come from a team run by Bob Kraft, who was allegedly paying sex workers in a strip mall on the day of the AFC title game. You think the Patriots really give a damn about what Brown did in Oakland? And unlike every other team in the league, they aren't worried about having to justify signing a guy days after he allegedly threatened to assault a team employee. Any other team would have their head coach and their GM at a press conference trying to spin how they believe that Brown is really not that guy. Brown is a changed person since the incident. He truly regrets what happened. That's not who he is. Now, Patriots aren't doing that. Everybody else would, but not the Pats. They're just going to have Belichick get up in front of the media, grunt a few times, refuse to answer the question, and then it's over. Just like that. And then everybody will rush in and cite Corey Dillon and Randy Moss and talk about the New England car wash and talk about how that's the perfect place for quote-unquote troubled players to go. And while they're making that argument, they'll conveniently forget about guys like Chad Ochocinco, Kenny Brett, and Michael Floyd, who didn't work out there. Albert Haynesworth, who didn't work out there. I mean, sure, it's a no-brainer for the Pats. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm saying just don't be surprised if they did. It's a no-brainer. They lose nothing. They risk almost nothing at all. And in doing it, they tell you everything. Anyone who was going to sign Antonio Brown was making a value statement. And that's what the Pats did. And again, I'm not bashing them for doing it. I just don't need the Patriots or any Pats fans coming in here with a holier-than-thou attitude of, we do things the right way around here. That's not what they're about. You know what they're about? They're about winning. Fine. Just own it. Don't come in here holier than thou and talk about how we do it the right way. This is what we're about. Man, you're about one thing. Winning. And also, don't come in here and tell me what a brilliant maneuver that was by Antonio Brown. That he's some kind of diabolical mastermind because all of a sudden now he's in New England. A much better situation than he was in with Oakland. I mean, sure, I'll give you this. It is weird as hell and quite a quinky-dink that he ended up with the team that he wanted to be traded to in the first place. Pretty weird also, and a quinky-dink, that it happened so quickly after he got released. But you're telling me that the guy who somehow managed to get frostbite on his feet in the summer is playing some sort of version of three-dimensional chess? You're telling me that this was AB's plan all along? You're telling me that from the moment he was traded to Oakland in March, he always planned to bomb out in Oakland. You know, plan to get frostbite, plan to talk about a feet circumcision, make a complete and total ass of himself in the process, just so he could get to New England. That this was a plan? This was a strategy? That the guy had a contract that guaranteed him 30 mil, and now he has one that guarantees him 10 mil. That he just lost 20 mil. That's a rocket scientist at work? Come on. Even worse is this report that he allegedly sought out the help of social media consultants to figure out ways to get himself released from the Raiders. Are you serious about that? My man, you don't need social media consultants to figure out how to be horrible on social media. Millions of people are doing that every single day, and they're doing it for free. So back to the original question. Is it going to work for Antonio Brown in New England? I'm here to say there's no reason why it shouldn't. There's no reason why it shouldn't, except for the fact that he is Antonio Brown. And the only guy who looks worse than Brown is Gruden. Of the two guys who've been involved in this saga for the last 6 months, Gruden is the one whose rep has taken the biggest beating. Like, everybody knew Antonio Brown was like this. Everybody knew who he was after we saw how he handled himself in Pittsburgh. Some people, though, were still clinging to belief that Gruden knew what he was doing, that Gruden was that tough guy who had that hammer in Oakland, that Gruden would handle Antonio Brown. Instead, what does he do? He sends a third-round pick and a fifth-rounder for a guy who never played a single down, which is a great chaser to the Martavis Bryant trade, where he sent a third-round pick to Pittsburgh for a guy who ended up getting 18 receptions and then suspended indefinitely by the league. Pittsburgh 2, Gruden nothing. Then add to the fact that he left his GM out to dry after allegedly being threatened by that player, and the fact that he completely embarrassed himself as a coach and an authority figure by allowing Brown to do whatever the hell he wanted. Even saying after he taped him, even after saying that he thought it was, quote, awesome. He said that. After he taped him and put it on social, Gruden said, quote, oh, that's awesome. What's he got to show for any of this? Nothing. Well played, Chunk. Well played indeed. You got exposed on every single level over the last 6 months. If I were you, John, I'd win tonight. You better go out there and find a way to get it done tonight to try to change the subject. Blake Martinez is my guest. Blake, good to have you back. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Got a great win to open up the season and getting ready for a big game coming this Sunday.
That's it, right? Big one coming up and a big win to start the year. Let me take you back to training camp for a minute. There are reports of how good your defense was, but training camp, Blake, obviously is one thing. The regular season is another. How proud were you of how the defense showed up Thursday night and the statement that it made against a divisional rival?
Oh, extremely proud. I think all of us knew what we were capable of, and I know a lot, like just like you said, a lot of talk about this defense, how good we can be. And it was one of the things we emphasized throughout OTAs, fall camp, preseason, everything that, hey, once we get these pads on, we're allowed to play. We're going to show this team what we got. We're going to show this league what we are all about. And I think we did that on Thursday.
Blake Martinez joining us. Blake, on Chicago's first possession, they were on the verge of a field goal, or at least getting into territory, when you came through on 39 for a sack to force a punt. Take me through the play. What did you see, and how good did it feel to get home the way you did?
No, yeah, it was just a great play call by Coach Pettin, just using our certain disguise and kind of toy with their front and not allow them to know who's coming and who isn't coming. And at that point, he called the play for me and ended up blitzing through that A-gap, got free, and once you get those plays, you just want to get them down, and that's what I did and got us off the field.
Blake Martinez, my guest. Speaking of Pettin, how fired up were you when it was clear that he was going to come back as defensive coordinator in the offseason, and what is it about him that makes him so good?
Well, I was extremely fired up. Just from the standpoint last year, I think there was certain confusion for my individual self and just comfortability, wanting to get comfortable with the defense and have a defense locked in that I knew going into this, I guess I'd say, second year with Coach Pettin. And I think what makes him so great is just his disguise, running the same type of play, just putting different guys at different positions, and then also knowing his personnel, putting guys in spots that he knows that they'll thrive in, and just allowing us to play.
Blake Martinez joining us. So one more thought about that D, Blake, because after the game, Aaron Rodgers went way out of his way, and he did it more than once, out of his way to say, we've got a defense. We have got a defense. So how would you describe the defense in terms of both talent and attitude?
No, I think the talent is extremely there. Just all across the board, speed, physicality, everything that you'd want in any given position that you can point at on our defense. And then I think the attitude, the culture shift during this offseason and training camp has been incredible. Guys wanting to do extra, all of us doing conditioning after practice, making sure that we're ready to go to play 70-plus plays if we need to, doing everything from talking in the locker room, talking about little adjustments here on the sidelines. It's just a great culture that we're building, and it's just going to keep getting better every week.
Green Bay Packer Blake Martinez is my guest. And Blake, the offense, maybe the offense didn't exactly click the way they had hoped Thursday night, maybe, but you've seen them in practice. When they get rolling, how good can that offense be? And then in turn, how good is that going to make that team?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have 12 taking care of the offense, it's going to start rolling. I think it's just one of those things that we went through it last year with a new defense, just getting comfortable and doing that type of thing. But when the offense is moving during practice, we have a tough time, and they can't be stopped. So it's one of those things. Once all of us are clicking on all cylinders, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams, I think we're going to be an extremely scary team to play against.
You know, Blake, you made it pretty clear that last season was not ideal. In fact, you had a quote where you said, "I'm not messing around this year. Last year I wasn't happy. A lot of things went into it," end of quote. So you're saying that, though, after a season when you led the team in tackles, you had a career high for sacks, but it sounds like you were not happy. So entering the offseason, what were you looking to improve upon?
Yeah, it was just the type of way I wanted to approach my offseason. I changed it up last year, did a different kind of workout routine in a different area, and just went back to my roots, went back to my trainer, Glenn Howe, out in Arizona, started working with him. I've been working with him for 10 years, and it's just been an extremely different kind of approach, and just so much stronger, so much faster, so much quicker, and just able to play the type of football that I want to play.
So as an example, as part of that work you did in the offseason, you dropped 3.5% body fat. You put on 7 pounds. I'm curious, how did you go about doing that? What kind of foods were you eating?
Oh, I mean, everything you can think of that's healthy. Waking up in the morning, having egg whites with avocado, going to lunchtime, turkey sandwiches, dinner time. Me and my wife would cook something up that's healthy, look up the, I don't know, top 100 healthy dishes you can make for dinner, and we just kind of switch things up and kind of have that as a bonding time.
So was it hard to make those changes?
No, I don't think it was. I think for me, I want to go into my career in the NFL and having no regrets, and that was one of the things that I wanted to pride myself on, and I know the type of person I want to be in this league, and I know the type of player I want to be, so whenever I thought about it being hard, I just reminded myself of that, and it made it easy.
Packers linebacker Blake Martinez is my guest. You know, and then you've got a lot of guys on that defense looking to you. As an example, tackle Kenny Clark said, quote, "Blake is definitely a leader on the defense. He works hard. People see it, and that's why they give him the role that he has as far as his communication and everything he does, because everybody trusts him, and he comes in early, and he works hard as he can. We all trust him to do all that stuff," end quote. So how do you approach that? How do you go about being a leader, and how much does it mean to you that you've earned the respect of everybody on that side of the ball because of how you handle your business?
No, it means a lot to me. I think it's one of those things that I've always wanted to have, that work ethic that guys can look at and grow from. I want to be the guy that people can go to if they need any help, need any advice. I pride myself being out there on the football field, knowing every position on the defense. So if anyone's out of spot, I can put them in their spot and get them ready to play. And it just, my whole motto is just making every single person around me better. And if I can do that, I think I'm doing the right thing every day.
Blake Martinez joining me for a few more moments. You mentioned your wife. Let me ask you about your daughter, Kinsley. During the offseason, she was with you on move-in day. She got to walk with you from practice for the first time. What was it like to share moments like that with her?
Unbelievable. It's one of those things you kind of get chills just thinking about it. It's something that I've always dreamed of doing, playing catch with her, walking with her at practice, walking down, doing the bike tradition with her. It's just been an amazing thing, and it's awesome to just see her grow up and be a part of this great journey for me and for my family.
That is amazing. Now let's talk about something for a minute that's not. Let's get to the really important stuff, like the fact that you had a chance to play classic World of Warcraft on your day off and the server crashed. How big of a buzzkill was that?
It was a pretty big buzzkill. I think it was, I always say there's sometimes I get signs of certain things, and I think that was a sign of that I'm not supposed to be playing video games and keep focusing all my efforts in football, no matter if it's an off day.
I see it working. All right, so really quickly, you've got Minnesota on Sunday. Have you given them much thought yet? And, man, they ran the ball really effectively. What are your thoughts going up against them, if you've given it some thought?
No, yeah, I think they're an amazing team. They have a great offense, great skill players, great offensive line, new additions on offensive line. It's just going to be a great test for us, and I think it's going to be another moment for us to go out there and show the dominant defense that we know we can be. And I think the run game is going to be one thing that will stand out. We didn't get a lot of opportunities in the Thursday night game. I think they ran the ball 12 times or so. So going into this game, it's going to be a tough task, and we're up for it.
All right, so as long as we're talking about this, and as long as we're talking about just one game, why don't we go ahead and do this? Tennessee Titans 43, Cleveland Browns 13. And it was brutal. That was the ugliest season opener for a team with Super Bowl hype in a long, long time. Maybe ever. A 30-point loss at home. And the fact is, it wasn't really just a loss. That was a 2x4 right to the face. Tennessee goes into Cleveland and absolutely smashed up the Browns in every way imaginable. Then again, the Browns did a pretty good job of smashing up the Browns themselves. Baker Mayfield, 3 interceptions, sacked 5 times, left the stadium with a wrap on his hand. I mean, this literally was still a game in the second half. It was 15-13 at one point. But then the Titans scored 28 unanswered points. The Browns committed an astounding 18 penalties for 182 yards. That's the most penalties by a Browns team since 1951. And there have been a lot of really horrible Browns teams. That's the most since 51. That's amazing. Almost as amazing as Greg Robinson getting ejected for kicking Kenny Vaccaro in the head. I mean, you got to tip your cap now. That was a legendary implosion. And they were never right after that because the entire offensive line went to hell. Guys getting busted up. They were down to 5 active linemen. You know, so you would stand to reason, or you would stand to imagine that's how Baker could get drilled for a safety.
From his end zone, Mayfield in trouble. Hit. Sack! Safety! Cameron Wake, the 100th of his illustrious career, produces 2 for Tennessee.
That was Titans radio. If they sounded like that on a safety, I wonder how they might have sounded if Baker threw a pick 6.
Throws, intercepted. Intercepted by Butler. 30, 20, 10, 5. Did he get in? Did he get in? Yes, he did. Touchdown, Titans! Malcolm Butler to the house!
And that's not all. More hideousness to come. How about Derrick Henry going 75 yards for a TD on a screen pass without being touched? Not a single Brown near him.
Play fake. Mariota rolling right. They're going to screen it to Henry. Man is blocked in the flat. A lot of room. 30, 40, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, 5. End zone.
Yes.
No flags on the field. 75 yards. Touchdown, Titans.
Not a single hand on that guy. There was not a single Brown that got one hand on him on a 75-yard TD off a screen. I mean, that game could not have gone any worse for Cleveland. At a certain point, maybe around the billionth holding penalty, it actually was kind of impressive to me. Like, I didn't think one team could commit that many penalties in 60 minutes. The offensive line was a disaster. The much-hyped defense was giving Tennessee pretty much whatever the hell they wanted. The Titans showed up with a lot of confidence, and then they dominated. That wasn't just about what Cleveland didn't do. It was also about what Tennessee did do. And unlike a hack emailer or some of you on Twitter is saying, that was not a below-average team either. It's a good Tennessee team. And I know what a lot of you are thinking. Cleveland got too much hype. Cleveland got too much love. Cleveland is not cracked up to be what we thought they were. Cleveland is not ready for prime time. The media built them up, and then they started to read their own press clippings and thinking, we are great, we're awesome. They thought they'd just show up yesterday, mess around, and win easily. What you're thinking is what Titans tight end Delanie Walker said after the game.
Circle this game. This is just another game. We ain't worried about it. I'm going to tell you again, man. They were who we thought they were. Y'all can crown them if you want to crown them. Still got to play football.
I get it. That's not unfair. That's not unfair. And what that is old school Denny Green. And I know all of you people are out there saying, same old Browns, same old Browns. The Browns are who we thought they were.
If you want to crown them, then crown their ass.
A lot of you were saying that. I see it on Twitter. I see it in my emails. I see you saying they're still chokers. Cleveland is still the mistake by the lake. This group is overrated. They're overhyped. They're paper champs. You're going to come in here and point to Odell Beckham Jr. rocking a Richard Mille on his wrist as proof that he is a diva and that they're not ready. You're going to say that most of last year's wins came against teams with losing records. You're going to say Freddie Kitchens was not ready to be a head coach. You're going to say that the league has already figured out Baker Mayfield or that he was overrated in the first place. Then you're going to make it personal. You're going to say, hey, Rome, you've been calling them America's team for nearly a year. Don't you feel like an idiot? Don't you want to take that back? That take aged pretty well, Rome. Don't you want to stop hyping them? Don't you want to apologize for that? Where's the apology, Rome? You know what? You know what? You might be right. Honestly, you might be right. That was that bad of a loss. That was a brutal loss. And you know what? I'm the first guy to say, own it. Be accountable. Be responsible. All right, then. All right, then. In the aftermath of a beatdown like that, I'll own it. And I am here to apologize. I am here to apologize to all of you for absolutely nothing.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
There you go. I'm not going to stop hyping them. Not yet. I'm going to double down, in fact. Are you cowards? Are you Johnny-come-latelys? Are you summer soldiers? Are you sunshine patriots? Are you bandwagon hoppers? Jump off. Jump off right now. Because I built this bandwagon in the darkness. I was building this thing when everybody else was clowning the Browns last year. I'm not giving up on America's team because of one loss. No, not only am I not getting off now, I'll buy more. I'll double down. I'm going on record as saying not only was yesterday's 30-point beatdown at home in the season opener not bad, I'm going to say it's good. No, that was great. Because now all you fair-weather fans are gone. Now it's just the guys in that locker room and the true believers. Baker Mayfield said it best himself afterwards.
Because everybody's going to throw us in the trash. And I think that's good. I know what type of men we have in this locker room. And quite frankly, I don't really give a damn what happens on the outside. I know how we're going to react. I know what we're going to do, how we're going to bounce back.
That's the damn truth. Hey, look, I know how tough their schedule is during the next stretch. I know that Baker might be banged up at the moment. And I don't hate that Beckham was wearing a third of a mil on his wrist during a game. In fact, I actually like it. And I know that Monday's game against the Jets could almost be a must win. I know this as well, though. That crew was forged in fire. They're tough as hell. They're going to bounce back. And yesterday was not the end for the Browns. It was the beginning. So again, let me make this very clear, haters. Jim Rome does what the bleep he wants, and that's hype America's team.
The double champ does what the
f*** he wants. I'm not jumping off, but go ahead. Do it. We don't need you. We never wanted you. Tom Curran. Tom, what's going on? How are you?
Here's my guy. What's up, Romy?
My man, Tom Curran. How you living?
Everything's great. Really great. It's I'm just happy football's back. And I know that there's a lot of side stuff we're having to cover, a lot of soap opera stuff, but I think the product looked really good yesterday. The officiating wasn't irritating. There were some competitive games, great storylines, and it looks like my underestimation of the Patriots' offensive weaponry is about to get crammed down my throat.
My man, Tom Curran, joining us. All right, so why don't we start right there. For a team, Tom, that had to replace its Hall of Fame tight end and its D coordinator and supposedly had some other questions to answer, how good was last night for the Patriots?
Phenomenal. And I think that it's funny, you alluded to the coaching right there, and I don't want to undermine anything that the players did, but I think that showed you that the way this train keeps moving. And I know that NBC showed, you know, Dante Scarnecchia and Ivan Sears and Belichick and Brady and McDaniels. I think that continuity makes an immense difference, because when you take the individuals on the Patriots offense, some of them are really good and some of them are useful. Rex Burkhead, you know, James White's great in the system, but Philip Dorsett, but they confuse you so badly because they can have these complex offensive schemes that you leave a Steelers team that's supposed to be okay on defense so confused they're losing people left and right.
We're talking to Tom Curran. Exactly, Tom. So to that point, if last night was that good for the Patriots, and it was, how bad was last night for the Steelers?
I don't know how many other teams in the NFL can stress you like the Patriots do with all those formations and all the intricacies of post-snap foolishness that they're going to throw at you, personnel groupings and all that. So probably not as bad as it looked for the Pittsburgh Steelers, offensively or defensively, because I think the Patriots, they're not scheme-related on defense in terms of how good they are. They do have good scheme, but they're really talented personnel-wise too.
Tom Curran, Patriots insider for NBC Sports Boston, is joining us. Tom, let me ask you something, because you know the Patriots as well as anybody or better. So let me pose the question that I ask about pretty much of everyone that I talk to around the league. How do you explain a 42-year-old man completing two-thirds of his passes for nearly 350 yards and three touchdowns against a defense that people thought was pretty good?
He knows where it's supposed to go. As he said to Peter King a couple of years ago after they won the Super Bowl, I know the answers to the test. So it's a matter of dropping back, having decent protection, getting it out fast, and if he's not having decent protection, finding whoever should be available. There's going to be times, and there were plenty of times last year, when he looked all of 41, and we talked about the cliff and whether he was meeting it. And to me, it was personnel last year when he wasn't able to do that, and scheme. They weren't able to get the O's in the right place to beat the X's, and that's why he looked poor. Last night and ongoing, they put him in a position to succeed, and if all you have to do is that, and you know, Romy, he reminds me of Nolan Ryan. He was still throwing at 46 in the 90s. There is something different about players like him, Nolan Ryan, Zdeno Chara, Manu Ginobili, all these guys who play so long, you know, Vince Carter. And I don't think that it is as rare as we think when we really look closely at it, if the guys take care of themselves and have a certain set of genetics.
Tom Curran joining us. Go back to your first point, though. The guys who take care of themselves, I mean, yeah, we see other athletes competing into their 40s at a high level, but how is it possible? The thing that blows my mind, Tom, about Brady is that he's lost nothing in terms of his desire to compete, win, but most of all, prepare. How is it possible that with all the wins and all the rings, that it never made him soft or comfortable or complacent, that he still is on that grind like he always has been?
It's interesting that I think if you really investigate year by year, there were periods where he hit lulls and dropped a little bit in intensity. But once he realized that he was about to get Bledsoed in 2014 and they brought Jimmy Garoppolo in, and he said, they're about to do to me and take me out behind the barn the way I did to Drew. I see it coming. I'm not going to let it happen. Because the period of time, look, he was the league MVP deservedly in 2010, unanimously. But 11, 12, and 13, he wasn't quite as sharp. And that's a fact if you watch those games and some of the performances. And some of it had to do with personnel. But I really think the presence of Garoppolo made him say, okay, how good do I want to be? How long do I want to play? What's the commitment level I'm going to make? And he said, screw it. I'm all in. And the most important thing to me is his passion is just body health for himself, and he wants to pass that on, as we've seen with the TB12 stuff. It's not this crystals and waterfalls and meditation place. It's a gym and a rehab center that he wants everyone to go to. So that's part of the reason, I think, Jim, that he's so passionate about it. And is able to keep, he devotes himself like your trainer or somebody else's trainer does to getting up every day and saying, how well can I eat today? How much can I lift? How far can I go?
I think you're right. It's a lifestyle, and it's also a brand, and it's a business. And then he can easily point to it and say, look, I know it works. Look at me. I'm a living example that it works, and you should do the same thing. Tom Curran's joining us. Tom, you mentioned the coaching staff. I mean, a lot of that credit obviously goes to Tom Brady. But then you look at the offensive scheme that Josh McDaniels drew up last night, all the different looks he threw at them. At this point in time, how would you describe the relationship between Brady and McDaniels?
They're sharing a brain. And I think there are times when both of them have frustrations with the other. And we saw that bubble over on the sidelines a couple of years ago in Buffalo. There are times that they'd like Brady to be more aggressive. There are times that I believe, you know, Brady would like things to go differently and be surrounded by more toys. Or, you know, the Gronkowski situation is pretty well documented in 2017. Don't have to revisit it. But I think right now they're in an unbelievably good place. because, you know, they're probably in the fourth quarter of the operation here. You know, they're well into the back nine. They're probably on the 16th tee if we're talking about it as a goal, as how long it's going to go.
Sure.
So they're going to enjoy the last three holes.
Tom Curran is joining us. It's a good analogy. And Tom, you made it. We actually made it this far without talking about Antonio Brown. Before I let you go, let me bring this up. You had a piece for NBC Sports Boston that was posted on Thursday night where you made the argument that the Patriots should not sign Antonio Brown. Lay it out for me. Why do you think they would have been better off avoiding him?
At that juncture, he had torn two teams apart. He had made them look ridiculous. He quit on both of them. Bringing him in means you're going to expect the player to go from being an absolute maniac to completely normal in a snap. And I think that it's also rewarding a player who has somewhat flown in the face of all that Bill Belichick holds dear in terms of teams, et cetera. And we could talk about Ocho or Albert Haynesworth or Corey Dillon or LeGarrette Blount, throw them all out there. I think that what Antonio Brown has just finished precipitating last week trumps all of them in terms of erratic behavior. That's why I made the case. Now that he's here, I'm looking forward to watching the football, but I do wonder how long he can keep it up. And the other thing I'm sure you got to go is, how tolerant will the Patriots be if he spends 6 to 8 weeks of being a Saint and then starts to revert? Will it be one strike and you're out then?
Tom, it's a great question. Can you answer it for me? How do you think that will go if he starts doing Antonio Brown things?
I think he'll get latitude. I think that they will. I think that they'll get hooked on the. I think they'll get hooked on the product. I really do, which is probably fine.
How do you see him fitting in with the other receivers and the rest of that team?
Socially, great. On the field, it'll be interesting because, as the Steelers writers were pointing out to me last night when I asked, you know, what's the care and handling of a player like this for a teammate, he does what he wants after the ball is snapped. If it's go to 14, come back to 13, and the ball will be on the way, if he sees a safety at 14 or maybe close by, he might veer and head in a different direction. And that's what caused Roethlisberger to have to hold the ball so often, pump, double pump. Brady's not going to really be down with that, as good as Antonio Brown is. So do they have to give him a set of plays that are, you just run down there, get open, take a left wherever you want to, and we'll find you? That'll be interesting to see, because everybody else has their roles and can deal with a night when they get four targets for 27 yards. Can Antonio Brown do that when he averages 10 targets a game for the course of his career since he's been a starter?
Tom Curran is my guest. We have him for a few more moments. So Sunday, okay. Tom, you've got the Patriots. One last thought for you. They're playing the Dolphins in Miami. The Dolphins are coming off an absolutely humiliating 59-10 loss. How do you see that game going? In other words, do the Patriots absolutely bludgeon the Dolphins, or maybe do they ultimately take it easy on Brian Flores?
I think, honestly, I think the latter at this stage of Bill Belichick's career. You know, if it gets to 28-3 in the third quarter, you're not going to see, you know, fake punts as the Ravens pulled out with the 35-3 lead in the first half, or 35-0, whatever the hell it was. I do think you'd see probably a lightning of on the gas pedal.
Tom Curran, Pat's insider, NBC Sports Boston, good friend of the program as well, giving us his thoughts on the Patriots. Tom, great to see you, man. Thanks so much. Great to have you on the program.
Great hearing from you, and enjoy this. Enjoy the whole season, baby.
Back to the phones. Let's go to Boise, J.W., JW, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Rome. How are you?
Good, great.
Hey, man, I could not agree more with your last Pat's take. That was solid. I also want to talk today about a little bit more about the dumpster fire of the NFL, known better as Antonio Brown. As you reported, you know, AB called Mayock a cracker and other possible slangs in the argument. And I just want to flip the script here a little bit. And let's say Mayock calls AB the N-word. Where would Mayock be today? I'd say Mayock be out of the NFL, most likely never to return. He'd probably have a difficult time ever getting a job. Yet AB gets a new job in just a few hours with the gutter Pats. That's unbelievable to me. Where's the consistency, Goodell? A racial slur is a racial slur. It should not matter who said it. I have a huge problem with that. I had very little respect for Goodell and the NFL before this. And if the NFL looks the other way, it's unbelievable. I'm going to Rome, here's my prediction. NFL will do nothing to punish AB. AB will finish the year with below average stats and most likely on injured reserve. Finally, he'll blow up. Look at the likes of Titus Young. Goodell, where's your spine and consistency in punishment? Hey, AB, Goodell, Pats, be more of a rock star, less of a D-bag. I'm out.
All right, JW, thank you. Let's be very clear about something. Cracker is not a good word. Cracker, however, is not the equivalent of an N-bomb. It just isn't. And I know some of you want to make that argument, and you've been trying to make that argument. It's not one and the same. I mean, I find it hard to believe that I even have to make that statement. Cracker is not the same. You can't flip that on its head and say, yeah, well, what about that? That's the equivalent of this. No, it's not. It just isn't. Let me tell you something else. Your point is, hey, Roger Goodell, what are you going to do about it? I got a better question. What did the Raiders do about it? If it were so horrible, why was that guy going to play tonight? And yeah, that was such a horrible thing, and I don't condone it in any way at all. But if that was so horrible, if that's as horrible as you make it sound, then why did John Gruden let it slide? If that was so horrible, why did the Patriots sign this guy? So that's not a Goodell thing. I mean, there's a lot you can hold Goodell accountable for. John Gruden saw a player call his general manager that and had no issue with it. Didn't suspend him and was going to play him. No, my bigger issue is not that he called him a cracker. Again, not a good thing, obviously. But my bigger issue was he was trying to fight the GM and had to be held back by his teammate. That's the bigger issue here. But in terms of that word and how horrible that word is, didn't seem to bother John Gruden, did it? Mayock didn't like it. 1-800-636-8686. But it's not the same. That's not the equivalent of an N-bomb. It's just not the same thing. It isn't. That's not my take either. That's not opinion. It just isn't the same thing. It's bad, but it's not that bad. And again, the Raiders didn't seem to care, did they? They were going to overlook that whole thing. They were going to overlook everything. Gruden thought it was awesome that Antonio Brown taped a conversation with him on the phone, didn't tell him, and then mocked him and clowned him and pushed it out over social. When asked about that, Gruden said, oh, that's awesome. Tough guy John Gruden running that place with a hammer and an iron fist. And he let Antonio Brown do whatever the hell he wanted. And then he got himself run. That worked too.
Good night now!